The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Rashad Penny, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap, and joining the show today, a man who you know very, very well, especially if you are out in the DFS streets, a great friend of the program, a great friend of mine personally, a degenerate who I've been doing the USFL and the XFL and the various preseason breakdowns with over on Roto Grinders. He's the king of the projected ownership over there across all sports, a man of the people, a social media influencer. his name is Chris Jimino. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Jimino. Jimino, what the hell's going on, brother?
I did not know that I qualified as radio gold or epic, but I am definitely happy to be here. And if I've reached that standard, finally, I'm considering this an achievement.
Well, I think we've done so many shows together, Jimino. I figured you've been on the pod or on the radio show at least at some point before. But yeah, dude, it's definitely awesome to have you on here. And that's just it's funny, man. Whenever I think about your job, the people might want to know, like, so you do the projected ownership at Roto Grinders, which people really depend on for a ton of their insight as far as, you know, who's going to be on what, who's on what play. And during the football season, I get it, because during football season, like for our cheat sheet at Roster Watch, I'll even take a shot at projected ownership. You know, I can't do it quite as good as you, but I'll always go cross check like what you're saying or what some other people are saying on other sites and make sure I'm not way too far out over my skis. But it feels like we come to kind of the same stuff, and that's because all during the week I listen to the different shows like on the Sirius channel. I listen to shows on Roto Grinders. You can start to get an idea of who people are interested in, and you can intuit who people are going to be interested in just on the way that roster construction goes. And but you know, we have 7 days to think about that. Like, how do you even do it for a day of baseball or a day of basketball? Is it the same sort of thing just on a compressed schedule, or do you just have a completely different system?
It's a different system. It's narrowed down at this point in time to basic math. It's, you know, you set a baseline for how people believe a player is going to perform for the day. We call those projections across the industry. And then if you don't have a better way to aggregate and come up with what the general consensus projection is, you know, you're otherwise just forming some sort of an algorithmic opinion of how people are going to choose one option over another. And it's all done in spreadsheets and with scripts. It's nothing particularly complicated, I promise you. It's just, you know, it's a boring answer. It's done via math.
Right. But it's not as easy as you taking like the R&D and everything that went into getting that thing set up to where it's set up to do the math that you can do. That's where the blood, sweat and tears went in. But what I mean is, like, so, okay, I'm guessing that when we come into an NFL slate and you're there at Roto Grinders and news comes down that, say, Joe Mixon's not playing, Giovanni Bernard's $4,100. He's going up against let's just say in previous years, whatever. You know, you can intuit that, okay, do you go at that point? Do you go in and manually? You can maybe manually make some shifts, do some things, take from one spot, put it towards geo, stuff like that. Like, is there that same part of the like, do you in your head basically about basketball, about baseball, whenever you hear something like Damian Lillard's out, do you have that same sort of thing where you can make those late adjustments and those moves? Are you up that late at night doing? I'm just interested in what it is that you do and how your process from day to day. It feels like there's so much to take in as far as ownership just on a one day slate.
Yeah, there is a lot. And that's why you need some of these automated tools. But basically, there's a constraint that governs all these lineups for all your DFS lineups. It's the salary cap. The salary cap and the positional eligibilities govern, you know, how many people, how many times you can possibly take a player. If you have a running back and there's one spot available for running back, it's a 100% of possible ownership to running back. And it's just a matter of looking at all the available options and how much those players cost relative to one another and coming up with a reasonable expectation of how many times that player would get chosen over somebody else. So how do you do it? It's coming up, like you said, with some of those proprietary formulas for how do you make that math happen quickly? How do you determine how many more times you're going to choose Christian McCaffrey at $11,000 versus someone like Najee Harris at $7,200? I don't know. I'm making up a price there, yeah, but you get the idea, yeah, right? Yeah. There's roster construction to consider. There's positional scarcity. There's slate dynamics. But the bottom line is, there are constraints that have to be followed. You can't possibly spend more than the amount of salary available in a lineup. And that's
the first thing you learn.
These rules tend to make doing things like projected ownership possible because you're playing a game.
Right. It makes sense. Do you have to stay up until 10 at night to see if Dame is going to play? Is that part of your deal? Is that like the Sunday morning stuff? Like, do you have to be on this all day?
No, you do. And that's probably the worst part about it is having to stay on it all the time. There's no way that you can do projected ownership if you're in charge of it that particular day and not know what's going on. My phone's blowing up constantly with alerts. I have every imaginable information alert set up so that at the very least, I know when it's time to go back in and have to run something. With Major League Baseball, it's easier because you get lineups that come out at a set time of day. But with football, you're getting, you're doing projections early in the week to try to get a baseline. And by Friday, none of it matters because everything's changed. The practice reports have changed everything. So you're constantly having to make these shifts. And it's, one of the things that I want to do more of this year is try to make more frequent updates earlier in the week. But the bottom line is that Friday update going into Saturday morning is almost always the most important one.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And for anybody who doesn't know, Jimeno has a bunch of different content at Roto Grinders, but you have the ownership report it's on Saturdays over there on the site. We walk through sort of the week, what happened, what narratives have shifted, what's changed, what's still going on. And like you go so deep into it. I've just always wondered, man, does Jimeno do this every single day for all these other sports? But kind of interesting to hear that part of the process there. Whenever we talk about you being sort of the ownership king, let's just transition into just a little bit of best ball sort of strategy in general before I ask you about some of these particular players. I know that you're right now projecting the season long stuff over at Roto Grinders, and I gotta hear the takes, Jimeno. You'll give us the takes. But for these best ball tournaments, the large field tournaments, right? DraftKings is going to have one. Underdog has one currently underway. Are there any things that come to you intuitively whenever you think about ownership percentage in DFS that translate to best ball large field tournaments in ways that we could maybe make a unique roster? Because it does feel like if you just, if you go along with every trend or every way that people are saying you need to win these things or everything else, you might end up with similar rosters to other people who are picking in the same slots. Is there anything that you think about with everything you've learned with DFS ownership that might be able to help us to be unique and yet still be competitive in these large best ball tournaments?
It's tough to give generalized advice because every draft is its own elemental experience from a game theory perspective, but you're trying to balance the probability of having the most number of players that are producing game qualifying scores for your lineup each week with the anti-fragility of not being exactly the same roster construction wise or player selection wise as everybody else. There's no secrets anymore in fantasy football. There's no longer the deep sleepers that nobody knows about. Even the guys that are down in round 17, round 18 on Underdog are generally going to be the same you know, variety of guys or similar variety of guys. So it's all about trying to ask yourself the question when you look at the draft you made, you know, what have I done in this particular draft that is making me unique and stand out for? So when I get to the playoff rounds, 15, 16, 17, that my lineup isn't matching as closely with the other lineups. It's going to match on some level. This, you know, if you made it to the playoffs, you probably have, you know, a pretty tight core of guys that that did well that year. You know, there's not going to be that much variation in who's going to be in these championship rounds, but you do need to have some unique element to it. So that's where you might want to think about either how you've structured your lineup as being unique and low owned, or maybe finding one to two guys that are within that build that might not be as quote unquote heavily owned amongst the group of players that are going to make it to the finals. That's tough. You know, there's some guys I have written down here, like Trey Lance early on might not be that highly owned at the quarterback position. I think Troutman will be owned in just about every league, but you could probably come up with some unique roster constructions around Troutman and the Saints quarterbacks that would make you a little bit different. We're going to talk about Bills running backs later. I think, you know, some of those guys could allow you to maybe float one or two of your running back positions to try to go with a more dynamic strategy at the wide receiver position, particularly in PPR, if you're playing on a PPR site. But, you know, this is not financial advice. I'm not yet locked in on my flag plans. I'm just giving some general ideas on, you know, how can you answer the question, what made my lineup different, so that when I get to those championship rounds, I'm not completely covered by, you know, six of the 12 guys with similar players.
Well, and it's just like, I mean, as I'm doing these simulations, I'm about to put out version 1.3 of our redraft cheat sheet. And when I'm doing these simulations over and over again, now that we can pull these various ADPs from the different sites and the best ball composite stuff, it's like, let's say you're picking at slot two. I can just tell you off the top of my head how those teams look. It's like those, you get Dalvin, and then at the turn you get either Justin Jefferson, but you sometimes don't want Justin Jefferson because he's on the Vikings. And so you maybe go Michael Thomas. And then at the turn after that, you'll have a choice between a running back who you feel like you don't want to, you know, reach on, like Miles Sanders, or you can go Keenan Allen, right? And then you go to the 4-5 turn. And in that spot, you know, maybe you still have a Miles Gaskin or a Travis Etienne hanging around. You end up with one of those guys. And then you end up with a Brandon Ayuk or a Cooper Kupp or something like that with your fifth round pick. And so, I mean, I can just tell you, if I can look at a roster, I can say, like, well, that looks like one of the simulations that we do out of the two hole or one of the three hole, because that's where the players are. Like, do you ever think about it like that and think like, man, this is just where they always go? I'm not going to go with one of those types of players here. I'm going to, here at this 2-3 turn, if I pick a two, maybe I'll go two running backs or something like that. I'll reach on them a little bit. I know I'm not going to, you know, but I know at the 4-5, if that happens, maybe what I do starts a little bit of a running back run. So maybe more wide receivers get pushed back. So maybe at that spot later on, I am looking at somebody a little higher up my board, like an Amari Cooper or a something like that, to where it feels a little bit different. Like, is what I'm saying make it, like, do you think I'm overthinking that? Does that make any sense?
I think a little bit, because there's a couple of different tried and true strategies to start a draft, right? Like a chessboard, you know, going running back heavy and being more paper fragile. You can go more wide receiver heavy and go zero running back. Generally speaking, the guys that you want to draft earlier in a draft are going to kind of just be the guys you want to draft. Eventually you look back at the end of the year and say, yep, those are the guys that you wanted to have early. Everyone's sort of starting the chessboard the same way. I think once you get later in the draft is when you're going to have more opportunities to get different and get more creative. Now, don't do what I did a couple of years ago. And like Aaron Rodgers was talking up Jake Kumerow, and he was having preseason magic. And then every round 18, I was smashing the Jake Kumerow button, you know, probably too many times, I'll be honest. And that wasn't a good strategy. That wasn't a smart way to play. You know, Jake Kumerow had never done it before in the NFL. He had basically no track record of becoming any sort of an every down player. And I was just making the leap that he could outplay someone like a Marquez Valdes-Scantling and get into the lineup on an everyday basis and be a league winner. Didn't play out that way. And I don't think that that's exactly the right kind of play. Just, you know, something that has the upside but also has a floor is the most ideal way to be different.
I think it would be different to if you were going to depend as a running back three on one of the Bills guys. And I know you're a Bills a Bills fan. You mentioned it earlier, but that's one of the things I told you I wanted to ask you about. So if somebody puts a gun to your head this season and tells you you can ride with Zach Moss, you can ride with Devin Singletary, you got to pick one, you got to do it right now, what are you going to say?
I'm going to say Moss. You know, the existence of Breida in that backfield is interesting to me in terms of the things he can do versus the things that Singletary can do. They're not the same player by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that, you know, Moss has the greater chance of being able to ascend to a more heavy workload in the passing game than Singletary does to ascend to a more heavy load in the run game or at the goal line. So this is where I'm looking at Moss as the kind of guy where I can get him on the cheap, and he's got upside to be more than what he already is on a pretty high-powered offense. Whereas Singletary, I just think, you know, you're sort of getting what you're getting there. He's much cheaper, which is good. And I'm not, by all means, if you want to speculate on Singletary, I think they're both reasonable gambles. But I think Moss is the one that has more league-winning potential or more best ball winning potential.
People are just so split on that, man. We got Chris Trapasso on a couple weeks ago. He's from the Buffalo area, does the draft stuff for CBS Sports, and he has a sneaky feeling this year about Singletary. So it's I mean, that's why it's such a hard thing. I think probably the best answer is I don't want to have either. But you had a gun to your head and somebody's told you that you had to pick one. What about if somebody have to put a gun to your head about drafting Calvin Ridley as a top five wide receiver this year? Are you happy about that? He's saying he should be ready for the season. Or does that make you worry considering that he's coming off of foot surgery? And now I have heard the narrative floated out there that, you know, when Antonio Brown left, everybody said that Juju was going to go, you know, ape. I don't think Juju is Calvin Ridley. I don't think that is the best comparison, but he's certainly got some detractors out there saying now that Julio's gone, you know, to the moon with Calvin Ridley, some people are saying, well, tap the brakes a little bit. Which side do you fall on, or are you somewhere in the middle?
I know I started this broadcast by saying that I was qualifying as radio gold. I don't think too much math talk qualifies as radio gold, but for me, I'm not worried about Ridley because of any kind of surgery he's having. They're saying he's going to be ready. He's going to be out in the field as number one option by far on that team. The problem that I have is that, you know, if I project him at 27% target share, yeah, he's certainly going to be one of the better wide receivers in pro football, but on a team that I'm concerned about how much they're actually going to score over the course of the year. And then you factor in, you know, thanks to, you know, Josh ADHD's usage app on RotoGrinders, you know, we had 30% targets for Ridley without Julio.
But well, that's also what I was going to ask, is I was going to ask if there was a way to filter that on that tool. So that was at 30% when Julio wasn't in?
Yep. In the seven games that he didn't play, he was at 30%. When Julio was there, it was 21.5%. But then you factor in Pitts coming in here. I think by most people's objective opinion, Pitts is going to come in and be basically the wide receiver two in terms of target share. So let's say you gave Russell Gage 17% or so of the targets, and that leaves maybe 20% for Pitts. You know, that's a pretty big chunk over what Hurst was getting at 14%. And certainly Gage was at 17% last year. So, you know, that's more share that's coming off the table, in my opinion, with Julio leaving and you know, Ridley in the lineup alone without Julio. We saw a little bit of a sample of that. We kind of know what we're going to get, but this new situation is maybe just a little bit less than that. So I'm not saying that we're not talking about Ridley as a top wide receiver in the game, but people are drafting him like very, very high this season. So I'm not like super bullish on it. It's just a matter of this team's maybe not that great, and the situation is probably not going to merit for, you know, a full 17 game season, 30% target share. That's so, so elite. And it's really tough to get there. I'm not sure that we'll see it.
But your initial run, you're going to start out Kyle Pitts with a 20% target share.
Yeah, I'm going to do that for now, and I think that's pretty reasonable because
I think it is too. It just sounds big. But hey, man, he's awesome. He's awesome, and you look at the vacated targets.
Well, look at these guys that are, you know, when we talk about Julio leaving, look at the target share that's going to be left on the table. You know, all of Julio's targets are certainly going to get split between Pitts and the rest of the guys. I don't think Ridley's going to move that much. But Arthur Smith, do you think he's going to look at this personnel and say, hey, we got to get more wide receivers on the field?
No.
I mean, no, they got Hayden Hurst. They've got probably
former first round pick. Then you have the highest drafted tight end in history that actually looks more like a wide receiver than a tight end. I mean, they could almost think of him as the Julio replacement. It's like, you know, it's crazy.
So you're going to shift that wide receiver target share over to the tight end position. And I think Matt Ryan is, you know, we've seen sort of what he is with Hurst there. I think they're ultimately going to have like that typical wide receiver two role for Pitts. And that's where 20% comes from. That's pretty high end wide receiver two, but you also got to remember he's the wide receiver like three or four plus the tight end. And that's really where I'm coming up with that.
Any of as you're doing that projection, in any of the sort of shitty kind of ancillary Falcons guys come to mind is one, and Pitts clearly is not somebody we consider in that group. Any of the, any of them come to mind is at all worthy of consideration, maybe late in your drafts. I'm sure it's probably Russell Gage who you have the highest target share for.
Yeah, and that's really the only place you're going to go. You're not going to take Zacchaeus or, you know, like some scrub like Frank Darby if he makes a team. Like, you know, you're not really going to make that leap here.
I'll play the shit out of Frank Darby in preseason.
Well, we'll see about that. But he's certainly on – I got a giant list going. He's certainly on that list. Yeah. Gage is going to be, you know, similar to what he was doing last year with Julio out, in my opinion. And you're going to be seeing – probably pretty consistent weeks with maybe a couple of spikes, which is fine for best ball. You know, like if you're getting him on the cheap, like you might end up needing his 9, 10, 11 points to come into your lineup. I'm not overwhelmed by it, but it's certainly the guy among that group that has the best chance.
What do you think about Rashad Penny's chances now that he has had another small – they're calling it a small knee surgery. This guy has sucked ever since he got into the league. I mean, you're the expert on players who suck. Do you think Rashad Penny sucks? Do you think he's ever going to make it? It's always something or another. We've seen the flashes, obviously a great prospect, but Chris Carson is a dude who can sometimes get in the fifth round of these drafts. What do you think? Is Chris Carson a good buy? What about Rashad Penny? Does Jimeno say he sucks?
I'm going to wear that with a badge of honor, an expert in guys who suck. Yeah. look, Penny, I don't know that he actually does suck when he's healthy, but he's just really not been healthy. I don't think his season is done. It didn't sound like Carroll was saying that he was, you know, I mean, are they going to cut him or something? Like, why do you think that he's done?
Oh, no, just is his career all but done. I mean, he's got only one more year of a contract with Seattle, I think. I think it's one more year. I guess I'd probably have to look into that, see what I think they have another year to where they can exercise it. He's used a first round pick. So I think his next year, they can maybe talk about a fifth year option. I guess I'd have to look into it, but look, things have gone downhill. I mean, they've re-signed Chris Carson for veteran running back money. They used a first round pick on Rashad Penny. Looking back, it was a terrible pick. I mean, it's just like, do you think he's on his way out?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's not on his way to prominence this year. I mean, Carson's the guy clearly. Like, doesn't matter what's going to happen. You're going to see, you know, a quarter of the rush attempts go Penny's way. He's probably not going to be involved in the passing game. And you're not even thinking about him really for fantasy football. I mean, you need a Carson injury, which is not insane. But they still got other guys there that can come in for rush attempts. I think they still have DJ Dallas. I don't know if Travis Homer will still be a thing, but he's still lurking. There's really no reason to get excited about Rashad Penny for this year coming off the injury, especially given that he's had surgery. Now you talk about Carson. You can buy him at his ADP. He's I wouldn't call it like a raging buy, but I would call it, you know, 32.7. I'll take him over J.K. Dobbins right now. I'll take him over Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, who's going like at 21 on underdog. I think he's a good talent, and I think that there's potential for that to pay off. It's just not – I would rather take Carson at 30. And
jeez, you know, is his underdog ADP 32.7?
That's right.
So in PPR leagues, he's just going a whole lot later as far as the ADPs on ESPN and Fantrax and some of those other spots. Because I've seen him going well into the fourth round, sometimes the late fourth round in some of these simulations. But here's the thing: the best ball ADP oftentimes the ADP for these best ball tournaments is the sharper players who are kind of sort of playing in these, And we see that we see as we get to August, we see those ADPs tend to converge. So I'll bet you that Carson, especially given this Penny news, is some, and given the news that he's going a lot higher on Underdog than I thought, might be somebody that we see move up.
I handicapped every single game of the season because I'm like Ace Rothstein now, apparently. But I came up with probably five favorable spots for Carson, and that's it. You know, below average rush or worse in terms of his strength of schedule for rushing. So I don't think that the schedule for Carson is all that great going up against San Francisco a couple times and some other good teams. And the two weakest are stashed down week 14, week 17. So, you know, if he's not like killing it for you and you're taking him at 30, you know, he might have some risk of not being like a standout like league winner this season. But, you know, you can't base your entire fantasy football decision on strength of schedule. So it's not enough for me to not be wanting to draft him. That's for sure. He's got talent.
Well, one of the better strength of schedules, at least at the wide receiver position for redraft leagues, and also just as far as just the actual, you know, game script stuff, for if you just look at the projected win totals, is the San Francisco 49ers. And whenever you look at that backfield, you say, well, if they're going to, if they could be in good game scripts because they have this, you know, pretty, I mean, as far as projected wins, like 10 less projected wins going against them than some of these teams that are halfway down the list. When you look at that, you say, well, I'd like to be involved in the running game there. Let me ask you about a couple of these questions, one for running back, one for wide receiver, one for quarterback, one for tight end. Which would you rather have? And they're going in separate spots, or they're going in similar spots, similar tiers in redraft. We just mentioned the 49ers running backs, Trey Sermon, the rookie, or Damian Harris in New England.
Well, like you said, I love the 49ers, love their schedule, and I love their run game, but you know, maybe midseason we might see Jeff Wilson come back and suddenly we've got a crowded situation there. Mostert's still lurking around there. I think ultimately I like the pedigree of Harris and the fact that he's going to be the lead dog in an offense that is definitely going to be run centric and play defense. I mean, that's really how they're going to try to win this year. I wouldn't say they're going to try to hide the quarterback, but you know, Cam Newton had a questionable year last season. They've got, you know, at best Mac Jones or Stidham behind him. If for some reason Cam couldn't survive the entire season, I think they're going to definitely rely on the running game, and Harris, you know, is definitely going to be the bastion of that. And I think that's particularly going to be true near the goal. I could be wrong about that, but that seems to be how I'm going to lay it out here in my projections.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you. I have Damian Harris just a slight tick above Trey Sermon as of now. I'm open to changing it if we get closer in and the word is they're just feeding Trey Sermon in practice or whatever. That could definitely be up for amendment. All right, so staying out, kind of speaking of Trey Sermon out on the West Coast, for redraft this year, and let's just say for PPR, Keenan Allen or DK Metcalf?
So look, I have a lot of respect for Keenan Allen and what he's been able to do, but Metcalf is an Adonis in his age 24 season who's done absolutely nothing but rip people's faces off to the tune of 2,200 yards, 17 touchdowns so far. I'll be projecting him for more fantasy points and touchdowns than Keenan Allen, and I think that the face melter factor coupled with the projection is enough for me to say that I'm going to take DK Metcalf more often. Allen and the Chargers are going to see, you know, five of the weakest projected defenses, though, you know, Vegas, Houston, Cincinnati, Dallas, Minnesota. But ultimately, I'm still going to take the talent and the sex appeal of DK over the pretty decent schedule of Keenan Allen.
Are you buying any of the Joe Lombardi, sort of the new offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi there, the way that he would use Michael Thomas and stuff on those slants that could just be, from a PPR perspective, could be big for Keenan Allen? I know that you're clearly much more bullish on DK Metcalf, but are you buying anything into that coach-centric talk that our boy, the Podfather, would want to slap the words out of my mouth for even bringing up?
Well, how many more targets is Keenan Allen going to get? I mean, the guy gets like 15 target games. I mean, how many more targets do you want?
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably true. All right. What about for tight end? How about this? We're gonna hear this argument after the big three. And, you know, Kyle Pitts could even enter the conversation for the big three if people get too crazy. But people are going to argue, Jimeno. They're going to argue Kyle Pitts or Mark Andrews. Do you have a dog in that fight?
Aren't the big three Kittle, Kelsey, and Waller?
Yeah. What did I say?
Well, you said the big three. Like, I mean, if you had someone else, you got four. So
Anyway. I was gonna say maybe we could hear the drum beat so strong for Kyle Pitts that he could. It's not too crazy for me to imagine come August, people say that you should take Kyle Pitts in the top three if things fall just right.
No, I think when it comes down to it, you're going to see Pitts closer to where people have Andrews than they will up to those top guys, but for sure. I mean, 20% targets is nice, but I mean, I still think you're going to be looking at touchdown expectation a little bit lower for the Falcons. I still think you're going to be looking, when you compare these two guys, Pitts and Andrews, that ultimately Pitts having the more play volume and more projected target share is going to win out over Mark Andrews, who plays in that Ravens offense that's just going to run the ball an awful lot. And they actually added a couple of additional targets this season. Not saying that that's going to slide a ton of action away from him, but I just think that, you know, Lamar Jackson is ultimately not great for the fantasy options surrounding him.
All right. Finally, for the quarterbacks, and I just have a couple questions for you after this, but just as far as this game, this or that, this guy versus that guy, Ryan Tannehill, or who's just gotten Julio Jones, or Joe Burrow, who just there's just been the reporting today saying that he's planning on being fine and completely ready to go for week one.
I think you hear the argument that you got to get the Bengals because the Bengals have a terrible defense. They're going to be in shootouts all year. That's probably true, but I don't know if the Titans defense is all that much better. So suddenly you've got an efficient quarterback who's proven it a couple years in a row that he can be efficient with, you know, Corey Davis and some pretty jabroni-ish other receivers. And now he's getting Julio on deck. You know, Firkser's still a pretty good receiver. You've got the big dog in the backfield. I'm liking Tannehill in this spot for consistency reasons. I think that Burrow might be able to have bigger individual games. I think you're going to like Burrow more for DFS than you're going to like Tannehill more often than not. And because you're not going to be able to afford the stack, quite frankly. You're not going to be able to afford Julio and A.J. Brown and Tannehill together. But you'll be able to probably get weeks of, you know, Burrow, Boyd, you know, Chase, et cetera.
In those big Derrick Henry chalk weeks, maybe if you paid up for a double stack there, that could be fun. Could be fun in tournaments. But, yeah, you're going to be able to stack the Bengals a lot cheaper because they're going to have three wide receivers that everybody is not – exactly sure who to take. And so let me ask you about those guys. If you had to pick for PPR redraft, if you have to list the Bengals wide receivers in the order that you would take them between T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, and Tyler Boyd, how would you rank those three?
Going off the underdog ADPs, I'm taking Higgins first because he's 10 slots cheaper than Chase. And I'm quite frankly just projecting him for a couple of extra targets anyway. Boyd, you know, his price is 20 spots cheaper than both of those guys. And, you know, the Bengals are going to be trailing, like I said. You know, they're not going to run, you know, two tight end sets and everything when they're trailing in these games. They're going to be getting multi-wide receiver sets out there. You're going to see Boyd on the field a lot this year, running routes when it counts. And I think that he can certainly come up with enough spike weeks to pay off that price tag in that weird area of the draft for wide receivers. And then Chase is the last guy that I would take here. Obviously he's one of the better prospects that's come around in quite a while and he's going to make the team better. But, you know, I just don't know that you should pay that premium for him when these other guys have just as good a chance week in, week out to produce.
Is it too much trade secrets for me to ask you if that's how you, is that how you have the target shares? Or
no, I think Chase will be above Boyd for sure in target share. I mean, the guy played with, you know, is this a shower narrative situation? Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, we're talking about
in college and showered.
Again. Yeah. The shower narrative definitely going to yield more targets than the Tyler Boyd, you know, Bengal shower narrative. But ultimately, I still think that Boyd for the price tag in these best ball drafts and maybe even in season long too, is a little bit better value.
Are you buying? Do you think the Chase Edmonds is a value down in Arizona where he's going? Do you think there's any? Some people were saying that it could be just an epic tease and the people are going to pay up for Chase Edmonds and the people who just paid all the way down for James Conner are going to end up just crapping in their cereal and, you know, making them cry all season long. What side of that do you sit on?
Wait, people are drafting James Conner?
Yeah, some people are.
Well, tell him to stop that. First, if you know a friend out there who's drafting James Conner, just help them out. I mean, this is a this is an early down grinder who's not going to be getting a ton of the targets. You want targets from your running backs in fantasy football from everyone not named Derrick Henry. So you're looking at the price tag here on Edmonds, and it really depends what you're expecting from him. If you're expecting him to get a ton of rush attempts and be the goal line back, I'm not so sure that's a lock. But if you're expecting someone who's going to have over, you know, double digit target share on an offense that plays really fast, and you know, you think he can hold off Eno Benjamin if in the case that Connor goes down, he's injury prone, right? Like that's your upside there with Connor. If you want him to be a league winner, is that he, you know, Connor misses time and then he's actually getting more with rush share too. Bottom line is I expect this price tag to be pretty fair on Edmonds, but if I do need a running back in that area of the draft, I love taking him over other guys in that quote unquote running back dead zone.
He is Chris Cimino. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Cimino, CRISGIMINO. So Chris Cimino, Cimino with a G. You can find all of his content on Roto Grinders. We talked about the ownership stuff, but we talked about everything he'll be doing with the preseason, everything getting into the season with the DFS, all that you need there. Cimino, anything you want to plug, anything else you're doing? You said you're working on season long projections right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're going to want to come over to Roto Grinders for NFL for preseason for sure, right? We're going to have the optimizer. We've got projections coming for that. I mean, when you're talking about projecting preseason, you're not talking about as much precision, but we're definitely going to do our very best to get you some quality quantitative advice to put into the optimizer for you to build multiple lineups. It's fun. If you've never played preseason DFS, it's, you know, we're going to be hanging out in Discord. We're going to be having a good time over there, but certainly for the regular season, our optimizer can do it all. rotogrinders.com/premium. Come join us, hang out, and try to win some money.
Yep. And you guys know me, man. I'm a Roto Grinders dude, man. Love everything that they do over there. Proud to be a small part of some of the production stuff, and could not agree with Cimino more about that. All right, I got one more question for you, Cimino, before I get you out of here, and it's what everybody wants to know. It's a hot dad summer, right, Cimino? What about Odell Beckham? Is he turned into an old man? Is he just an old dad bod man now? Are we ever going to get back the Odell Beckham of old?
No, we're not.